Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is a rare treat for us. This is an episode of Force Center called Force Center Meets. Meets is spelled with two E's. Someday we'll do an episode where we just have maybe some salami and talk Star Wars. That will be fun. But we've done a few of these episodes where we meet another Star Wars fan, talk about their interest in Star Wars, and just get to know them as a fan and the cool stuff that's going on for them. So I'm excited for this, Ken.
This is going to be a lot of fun because we have ourselves a Star Wars fan and a Star Wars author in the Force Center studio today. We have got two wonderful books coming your way. We got Star Wars Exploring Tatooine, an illustrated guide, and Star Wars Galaxy's Edge Treasures from Batuu. These are from Inside Editions, a company we love so much. And the author of these books and a big, giant Star Wars fan is Riley Silverman, and she's with us today. Riley, welcome to Force Center.
Hello. Thank you for having me. And I should point out that at Galaxy's Edge, you can get a charcuterie board at the Ogus Cantina. So if you want to do Four Center meets something, it is right there for the taking. You can get a reservation at Ogus. You can enjoy a nice plate of meat.
Oh, wow. The sweatiest podcast ever. Not even in any sort of euphemism form, but literally a hot, sweaty Nepetu eating meat, talking Star Wars. I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, that was added to the menu after I wrote my Batuu book, as well as a new, there's like a pretzel bread thing. It's I can't remember what their in-universe name for it is off the top of my head, but it's delicious.
It just secures second editions of books when they add pretzel items to menus.
Indeed. Also, there's a third book that I think was not on the radar when I originally booked this, but did get announced at Comic-Con this year, which is the Life Day pop-up book and advent calendar, which is also coming out this fall. So you can look forward to that as well.
Awesome. Well,
when that comes, we're going to have Jennifer Landa come in and interview Riley about that one, Joseph, because Landa and Life Day go together hand in hand.
She's a big Life Day fan. She just loves it when Wookiees have a little ceremonial blanket robes.
Wookiees can have a robe for a treat.
Absolutely. Riley, you've done many, many things. Stand-up comedy, which is where I first met you, at a Joseph Scrimshaw-produced comedy show, RPG Live Plays podcast, comedy writing, pop culture writing. So what's your focus right now, other than Star Wars, and how does it all tie together, and where does Star Wars factor into that?
Well, how it all ties together is that I have ADHD, and so I can't keep one particular thing constant. Like, I wish that I was able to be more focused on one particular medium and, like, get really good at it and maybe famous. But instead, my brain goes where there is opportunity or where excitement is, or, you know, adventure, excitement. A writer craves all these things. So I think the closest thing I have to the thing that ties it all together is it's all usually pretty nerdy. That's kind of like, I think that like my, like if I had to give myself a title, it's professional geek. So that's probably like the closest I have for it.
Yeah.
Focus right now, besides that, I think it's still lots of pop culture writing. And a friend of mine and I wrote a screenplay that it's kind of like the last 2.5 years we've been constantly on the verge of it getting made. And so my focus is hoping that eventually goes across that board. I hope that we eventually get that green lit. So
that's awesome. No, and I'm right there with you on the, you know, it's not the master of none idea, but it's I get the theory behind it. Like if I just did this one thing, but I just love creating, love doing other things. So I'm sure you probably experienced that as well, especially all of us have a lifetime of geek. And now we can use that to share our loves with the world. That's why stop yourself, you know?
Yeah. And there's lots of mediums. And so it's really fun to play in different things, and they all like poke different things at my brain. Like, you know, I did stand up for 20 years. I don't really do it anymore, but I did it for 2 full decades. And so now I think because I'm so over having done like a very solo on stage thing. Now so much of my like focus when it comes to performing is things that are collaborative, which is why I love RPGs so much, and why I like writing with other people more than I like writing on my own. But I'm also often writing on my own anyway. But yeah.
Do you feel like that if another thing came along that you would be interested in adding something new to your quiver of artistic experiences? Because I think we're in this fascinating place where obviously a lot of us kind of need to do multiple things. And sometimes a shiny thing pops up and you're like, well, I should do that because it will fill this gap of time or money or experience. But then there's also just this desire to learn and do more. So do you think you're still in a phase of responding to shiny things?
Yeah, I think especially because I put stand-up behind me, I think that when I made that decision, which actually, Joseph, you were on the last stand-up show I did, because it was a show we did together at Gallifrey One in 2020.
Yeah, and I think I hadn't realized that you had kind of stepped away, and I was like, hey, do you want to do this? And you were kind of like, I'll do it one more time.
Well, we had talked about doing it the year before, and it got pushed back to the next year. And so I feel like I had made the commitment to do it with you. And then as it got closer and closer, I was getting more and more anxious, because I'm like, I don't know if I'm good at this anymore. But I was like, that's a good way to, yeah, that was a good bow out, like at a place that I love, where I like being around the space and stuff like that. But yeah, when I stopped doing stand-up, I had this kind of mentality of, okay, this thing that you used to love is not giving you the joy it used to, and it takes up a lot of your creative energy. And so it was very much if you put this aside, what will your brain do with that creative energy moving forward? And I don't know if I've actually found the thing that completely replaces stand-up for me, if anything will, but I think that's why, to answer your thing about shiny things, I think I'm looking for things like, okay, is this a thing that I can put some of this energy into? Is this a thing that I can try something with? So I think that's where I'm at with it right now. So I'm kind of in this, and as things are opening up and as the world is changing again, I think there is, you know, a lot of space right now to try new things. So I think, I guess I'm very much the Qui-Gon Jinn of writing and creating right now, where it's like, oh, let's do things at different angles and try different things. So
I think it's very smart to look at our creative lives like a resource management game, like you're playing a video game and like, I only have this much room in my suitcase. If I rotate my grenade launcher, what else can I fit in there creatively?
That's awesome. Yeah, I just need a, I need a bag of many things, but for creative, so I don't burn out.
That's part of it. As someone who has quit and returned to stand-up comedy like three or four times, I respect anyone that makes the decision to step away and then also being open to the possibilities of maybe the love returns or maybe something hits or maybe you have something you want to say. And that's, that is very Qui-Gon, just being, you know, present and then open.
Yeah, I'm open. Yeah. I never said never, never when I left, but I did say I'm going to stop this until I feel like doing it again. And I do think that it was the right choice, because I will say that over the course of 2020, when all the places closed down and took a while and things we still haven't really fully come back, at least in LA.
Yeah.
I haven't missed it. Like, I haven't had any moment where I've been like chomping at the bit, like, oh, I wish I can get back on a stand-up stage. I'm kind of like, no, I'm good. In fact, people even invite me to go see stand-up shows and I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm okay. I don't need, people will tell me about comedy shows they were at. And I'm like, I don't even want to hear about that anymore.
Yeah, I understand. I just did my first stand-up show in, you know, multiple years, mostly because of the pandemic. And it was both like thrilling and oh no, because I've opened up more space in my life of like, oh no, I don't want to be thrilled by this.
Well, you always have approached stand up in a way that I've always been impressed by. And it's where you almost do your comedy almost like a one man show, where you kind of seem to like write a whole show around a theme, like your Joseph Scrimshaw versus feelings or Joseph Scrimshaw and the time of comedy and stuff like that, which I'm impressed by. And I wish that I could approach it as more of like creating new bodies of work each time, as opposed to me chewing over this. Like I always kind of never did the same bit the same way twice, because I would get bored of them too fast if I did that.
So
a lot of my like shows were me riffing on ideas and building on stuff, which is, I guess, the closest I can think of as to my inspiration for that kind of comedy was like Eddie Izzard, who, you know, she always does things a little bit differently each time and kind of worked through things, and, you know, her new hour would come out of her old hour and things like that.
Yeah, well, it, you know, it made watching you perform and perform with you fun, because, you know, I have plenty of comedian friends that I love, and sometimes like, maybe I should invite this person on the show because I would like to hear that exact set again, which is fine and good. And it's a great way to build things. But it was always fun to do shows with you, Riley, because I'd be like, oh, I recognize half of that bit, or that one's brand new.
Yeah, it was not great for wanting to get on television, because so many times like, hey, send us your tight five. And I'd be like, I don't understand what those words mean in that, that comment.
Every time. Well, in making a decision about stand-up or a lot of creative things, you open up some space for Star Wars. You got these wonderful books coming out. I'm very excited about the Tatooine. Excited about all of these, to be clear, but I just feel as though I've grown up on Tatooine with a lot of folks as a Star Wars fan.
Yeah. So
excited to dive in. Tell us a little about your Star Wars books.
So, yeah, the Tatooine book was the big one. That was the first one that I got. And then basically based on having done that, my publisher, Inside Editions, came back to me and said, hey, we have a couple more books if you want to work on these as well. But, yeah, the Tatooine one was the one where about a year and a half ago, I was sitting at my computer in the middle of recording a podcast because, again, master of none. And I got an email during a break that said, you know, it was forwarded from my manager. And it just said, Riley's over my potential Star Wars project, ? And then that's the moment I died. And since then, I've been, you know, a corpse, which has been rough on me. But yeah, I got that done. And that was like kind of like late March, early April of 2021. And then it took about a month for everything to kind of work out. And then actually, weirdly enough, my I had to do an outline first of the Tatooine book and send it off to get Lucasfilm to approve the outline. And then once they sent that back approved, then I could start writing the book in earnest. And my outline was actually due to my publisher on May the 4th, which was just like the most perfect timing. And yeah, it was just getting to do this really fun deep dive into Tatooine. And I agree with you, Ken. I think Tatooine's the closest thing Star Wars has to a home world, right? Mm-hmm. It's the base of operations. And it gets a lot of flack for that. And I think unjustly, in my opinion, I think there's a lot of people who, there's a really like quick joke to make of, oh, I'm sure this is going to go to Tatooine again. Yeah. And I don't know. Obviously I'm biased because I wrote a whole book about the planet. So I've come to very much love it more. I have a Tatooine themed tattoo now. So, which is obviously one of the sons, but no, I Tatooine 1 and 2. Never mind. Sorry. I'm ADHD. I think what's interesting about Tatooine is that people get mad when stories happen there, but I think that story grows out of story. Mm. So a lot of things happen on Tatooine because a lot of things happen on Tatooine. Like you have to have Tatooine in Return of the Jedi because you have to have a planet. You have to have Luke have somewhere that he returns back to, but is entirely changed, right? So that's why Jabba's thing has to be on Tatooine, because that's where Luke goes back to, and now he's a different person than when he left. Because when he left, he's saying, I'm never coming back here. And he does, but also doesn't, because he's not the same person anymore. That's a hero's journey. You have to have that moment. Boba Fett has to happen on Tatooine, because the last time we saw Boba Fett, he fell into a Sarlacc pit on Tatooine. There's not a whole lot of places you can start from if you're not going to start from there for that character.
Maybe this Sarlacc like spits people into space.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. And then similar, like Obi-Wan has to start on Tatooine, because we know for a fact that Obi-Wan Kenobi is on Tatooine for this period of time. It's like you can't be mad that it starts there, but also be mad that he leaves during the story.
Yeah, we've talked about it, about the Tatooine thing. I think it's kind of fascinating of how much we attach our perception sometimes to a character's perception, right? And if you start with A New Hope in any way, shape, or form, regardless of your age, you start with Luke's perspective that it's boring and nothing happens there. But then if you kind of look at the canon of storytelling, like you're talking about, Riley, Luke's just kind of wrong.
Yeah.
He's a kid who's just like, I'm bored in my suburb. Nothing ever happens in Minneapolis. Like, we don't live in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I get it.
You live
in
a suburb and your parents don't let you do anything. Of course there's stuff happening.
Well, you can
here,
do stuff. You just have to make sure your chores are done.
Yeah.
The thing, too, I understand the argument of, with all the gorgeous visuals there are in the Star Wars universe, why do we keep coming back to this desert planet? I understand that. First of all, it's because it's easier and cheaper to shoot in that kind of location. Yeah. That's a big reason why to do that. But also, yeah, I think the Tatooine, I said this in the book a little bit, but in a very in-universe way of saying it. I think part of the charm of Tatooine is that it is this seemingly unassuming planet in the middle of nowhere that is the furthest place from the bright center of the universe, and yet ends up being the drawing ground for all these major, major events. And it's two of the most powerful force users across two generations are from there. You know, these like epic things play out there. And I think that is Star Wars in a nutshell, is these diamonds in the rough that end up becoming really important to the overall lore. Like Tatooine is the rebellion, right? Tatooine is the scrappy leftover Jedi who are rising up to fight off and defeat an emperor. Tatooine is this desert planet out of nowhere, somehow becomes more important to the galaxy than Coruscant or, you know, Hosen and things like that. So
we're right there with you on that, because it's that idea of, you know, you don't think you're part of the story, but you are the story, right? Your journey's begun. You're Rey climbing those steps. You're Luke dreaming, looking at the sunset. It's absolutely a big theme there. And we love it. And we've talked about it in more detail, the complaints, and it just so happened that three shows back to back factored in. That won't always be the case, but hey, you know, it's a big spot and we need to explore it.
Yeah. That's what's so fun about the book, was that I got to explore that, and I got to, you know, go through every location that was around. I wrote the book in spring of 2021. So some of the stuff from Boba Fett, unfortunately, and even some of, you know, none of Obi-Wan really made it in. But otherwise, you know, like it was so fun to have a section to be like, OK, here is where Rey buried these lightsabers, but right next to this is where Vader arrived with Dr. Aphra to try to find where Luke was. So I was able to bring in stories from comics, bring in stories from Rebels, bring in stories from Clone Wars. So it's like, yeah, you see, you know, the Dune Sea, and you're going to talk about Jabba's barge, but you're also going to talk about Ahsoka and Anakin bringing Jabba's child back and trying to fight off different clone, like separatist attackers and things like that. So it's so fun to see how many of these stories intersect and interweave across the like storylines.
That's really cool. Do you think of your book as something that like a younger fan can discover and then go, wait, where does this happen? And like search out a comic or the Clone Wars?
Yeah, that's actually my ideal for how it will be experienced. I think the book works really well both as a nostalgia piece for people who have already been through these journeys and are excited to go, wow, look at it all together on one page, but also for younger fans to go, huh, I want to learn more about this thing. I'm going to seek this thing out.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the comics, I've already looking at some of the sample pages. Yeah, you got Aphra and you got the great stuff from that line and the Vader line. Even Luke and Boba Fett fighting in the hut, like the Kenobi had, that's great comic stuff from really 2014. And was it ever, I guess, overwhelming? Is that the word, to sit there and just kind of look across all of canon and go, what's there for me? Or how much did just come out of your heart of you've read it and loved it and knew you want to talk about it?
It was a pretty good mix. There were some spreads where I already had everything I wanted to put in the spread there. And then there were some spreads where I was kind of like, okay, what can I find that works for this area? Because there are some things where really only one or two scenes seem to happen. But it ended up definitely not being an issue of not having enough to talk about anywhere. Everything I found. The bigger thing for me was like trying not to retread what another book had already done. Mm. So like, I do a section on the Jawa Sandcrawler, and I didn't want to just recreate the Complete Locations book or the Machine Schematics book. So I had to really lean into more, like, as much, instead of talking about like what's physically there, it's a lot more like, here's some story things that played in around it.
Love that. Love that.
Mm. Yeah. Great. So, and then I don't know as much about the Batuu one. What's the deal with the Batuu book?
It's a smaller book. It's more of a collection of little like toys and tchotchkes and stuff for people to enjoy. So there are like post-it notes that look like the coasters from Oga's Cantina. And there are it's like a Chewbacca keychain that's attached to the Millennium Falcon section. There's like a recipe from the Galaxy's Edge recipe book. There are like lightsaber stickers. So it's like a little fun little treasures and activities kit. And then what I wrote on that was, I basically did the descriptions of all these sections of the planet. But the thing that I got to do for that book that I was really excited and happy about was I got to write a letter in character from Vimarati to Leia. And so everything else I've written in these three books have all been in universe, but not per se in character.
Yeah.
They've all been kind of like these broad general terms, but written in universe. This was the first thing I had to write for Star Wars where I was writing in a character's voice and for a character. Mm. And the fact that I got to write a letter to Princess Leia as the very first thing that I got to do that with in Star Wars is great. And it's one of the first things when you open the book, there's like an envelope and it has that letter in there. Mm. And that was really, there was something really special about that because Princess Leia, obviously as someone who has meant so much to me my entire life. And so being like, this is my letter to you was really wonderful.
Yeah, that is really, really great. I think that is, to me, the most emotional part of Galaxy's Edge is, you know, having read the Black Spire Outpost book and thinking about the amount of work that Vimarati and her crew put into making this happen is, you know, a really great point to me where the storytelling and the theme park experience collide in a really great way. So that's awesome that you got to explore that.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine who told me that when she read through the book, it felt like when she and I visited the park together in February and I walked her through and showed her around. So that was kind of my goal in writing it, was I wanted people reading to the book to feel like what it was like to go to the park with me and have me nerd out about everything. So I imagined myself as like a big fan of Black Spire Outpost who was excited to show a newcomer to the town.
Well, speaking of nerding out and what excites you, we want to talk to you a little bit just about your relationship with Star Wars in general, starting from the beginning for you. You know, at Force Center, we're big fans of the idea that we can always evolve and grow, but sometimes the way we're introduced to Star Wars is kind of that's our beginning point and colors our perspective. So what was your beginning of Star Wars fandom?
The very first awareness that I had of Star Wars was my brother having a bunch of the toys because he was born in 77. I was born in 81. And then I think that my next real awareness of it, where it became a thing that I had a connection to, it was a big thing in the 80s where you can get these like kind of like conversion vans, like family vans that would have a TV with a VCR in it. And that felt like the lap of luxury to have a VCR in your van. Mm. And we had one of those and I don't want to brag. We had one of those vans and we went on a family vacation. We had van money, but not fly to our vacation destination money. So we had the van and we drove to Florida. Is there Florida or Myrtle Beach? I can't remember which trip it was, but we drove somewhere that had basically like a full day's worth of travel involved. And so my mom found a new release of one of the VHS sets of the original trilogy. And it was the one that came packaged with a fourth tape that was the From Star Wars to Jedi documentary.
Oh, yeah.
And so we watched the entire trilogy in a row. So my first experience of the movies were watching them from a small TV VCR combo in the backseat of a van.
You are the special edition commercial of See It Again for the First Time.
That's amazing. Well, okay. First of all, these were not special edition. These were original cuts. I saw special edition in theaters, so that was a little bit older. Yeah. I was an adult, but yeah, I mean, I was an adult. I was a teenager. But
were the VHS pan and scan, or were they widescreen?
Oh, I could not. You could offer me $1 million right now. I couldn't tell you the answer to that question.
isn't that amazing that you found the magic in a way of viewing that would now be just like disgusting to many human beings? So like, what?
Yeah.
In a van, shaking VHS quality, perhaps not even widescreen. What was it that grabbed you? I mean, that's what you're describing. It sounds like such a great romantic, interesting way to experience the films themselves. But when your mind went into the world of the stories, what hooked you? Were you more of a Scoundrel fan? Were you more of a Force fan? How did it get into your soul?
I've always been a lifelong Force fan. I think the Jedi and Jedi mysticism and everything around that tends to be my main draw into Star Wars. Mm. I think it was a combination of that, and also I loved Princess Leia so much as a character, and I liked Luke so much as a character. So those were two really important parts of it for me. And I think there was also just that vibe of, like you said, that romanticism of it. We were going on a journey. We were going on a trip. And now here I was taking this other trip in the back of this van, and I was able to you mentioned it was definitely the worst possible quality way of watching it. I'm sure there was like tracking issues whenever we hit a bump on the road, but you wouldn't know it from I might as well have been inside a movie theater with that TV right in front of my face or something. Cause it was just, I was lost. It was just such a spectacle and such a fantasy.
Yeah. I love this story that the emotional experience is more powerful than the technical quality experience. It was powerful because you were taking your first van ride into a larger world, to misquote Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
So going forward in your fandom, you said Leia is really important to you. Luke, obviously there are so many characters to choose from. So which Star Wars characters do you gravitate toward? Who do you identify with? Who do you see a little bit of yourself in? All those kind of things.
Yeah, I think Leia at the time, especially because I was still obviously very unsure about my gender identity, and there wasn't a lot of language for it around that time period. Mm. And there was something, this is like things that I recognize now looking back. I wasn't this self-aware as a child, but I think the appeal of Leia to me at a younger age was that I felt like there was a part of me, like I knew that I was supposed to be a girl, but no one knew that I was, and that whole mess of things. But I didn't necessarily want to just suddenly become super pink and feminine and rainbows and things like that. Mm. And Leia was a character who didn't necessarily, who like was feminine, but also was a badass, right? So I think there was like something about Leia being like, hey, you can be a woman. You can also, you know, grab a gun and shoot a bunch of space cops down a hallway and then jump into a trash can and be awesome and lead an army. So I think that was my favorite Leia in the original trilogy as a kid was Leia on Endor when she's like in full commando mode with the poncho and everything like that. Like I was such a big fan of that. And also when she kills Jabba the Hutt, that's great.
Yeah.
But I think modern day, the characters that I most identify with are your Dr. Aphras and your Ahsoka Tanos and your Asajj Ventress and Rey to some degree. But I think they're the characters who are a little bit more on the outskirts and on the outside of things. Mm. I think Ahsoka and Asajj, especially for me, I did a piece that got taken down eventually because Sci-Fi pulled down a bunch of old articles, but I did a piece about how Asajj and Ahsoka were kind of like the opposite sides of the same concept of people who had been part of an order, but had been betrayed by that order, and then how they had to kind of find their own path through things. And I think that as someone who has often found herself on the outside looking in, no matter what part of, like every time I try to belong somewhere, I ultimately don't ever really feel super welcome, or I don't really feel like I'm part of the group. I always feel like I'm on the outskirts. Mm-hmm. I feel like I was the kid in high school who never had a clique, always had friends who were in cliques that I could be friends with, but never was like part of their clique. I would be like moving from table to table and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I really relate to that. And I think that's a lot with why I think Dr. Aphra has come. First of all, it's great to have a lesbian character in Star Wars, so I relate to that. But she's also like a disaster of a person, which I think I relate to. And I think she struggles to let people in. And I think she often feels like her presence is actually a problem in people's lives. Mm. And I think that that's something that I struggle with a lot. So having a character who I see all of that in is really good. And then there's also a character in the High Republic named Vernestra Vern, who I really like because she kind of has gifted child syndrome. She's basically a young Jedi Knight who became knighted in her like early teens and way earlier. So she has kids who are older than her that are Padawans still. And it's interesting to see how she struggles with accepting that she is a qualified Jedi Knight and almost has like Jedi Knight imposter syndrome. And there's a whole thing that they do with her where she modifies her lightsaber to be a light whip as well. And is like afraid to show anybody because it's so not typical of a lightsaber, but it's also like the Force literally told her to do it. She woke up and she had like a vision of how to do it and just made it happen. But she's like afraid to show it to her master because she's like, oh, what if he thinks that I'm like following the dark side or something? Cause I have this typically dark side weapon. And there's a lot of that kind of thing. And then Rey, I think, is another character that I super relate to, especially because of Rise of Skywalker, where this whole concept of, oh, everyone expects you to be this person and this is your name and this is who you're supposed to be. And being like, I'm not doing that. This is not who I am. Mm. I'm going to take a name for myself that matters to me. And I'm going to like figure out who I'm supposed to be as opposed to who the universe thinks I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Such a great theme in Star Wars, but so powerful in Rey's journey of that, I love how much, and you and I have talked about this, Riley, I love how much that she is, looking to her sort of inner truth, right? You know, like, who am I? And I'm going to base my choices on that, and having such a forward movement, but also a reflection of everything that she's experienced, who's made her who she is. It's so great and so powerful. I love what you're saying about Vernestra, that I wouldn't have thought to include Vernestra in a collection of people who are maybe a little bit on the outside, the same way Ahsoka and Asajj find themselves. But I think that's a really great way to look at Vernestra, even when somebody can be absolutely succeeding to the best of all possibilities to be elevated to a Jedi Knight at such a young age, can still wrestle with the questions and self-doubt. And I think that's those kind of characters help us all go like, look, we can see how awesome Ahsoka is and Asajj is from the outside, but look at how they can still wrestle with who they want to be.
Yeah, because you can still be an outsider even when you're fully invested as a member of a group. You can always feel, lonely in a crowd. And I think that Vernestra has a lot of that going on for her.
Yeah, absolutely. So I take it you're a big fan of the Clone Wars arc where Ahsoka and Asajj kind of realize that they're both being done dirty by their organizations.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest tragedies of the first cancellation of the Clone Wars is that we didn't get a lot of the extended Asajj storylines that we kind of got condensed down into Dark Disciple.
Yeah.
I would tell you, I flipped out when I was at Disneyland on May the 4th because I was there because I had Star Wars night tickets since I was at the park earlier in the day. And I thought they were going to sell the Ahsoka Rebel Sabers again because they had them as a special edition, but only online. And I walked up to the Doc Ondars where they sell the lightsabers, and there was a huge line. And I was like, oh, is this for the Ahsoka ones? And the guy was like, no, those are online only. It was very scoffy about it. Like, I'm supposed to know how your business works. But then he goes, oh, one of the ones we have is the Asajj Ventress one. It's like the yellow blade. And I lost my mind because I could not believe they actually made Asajj's yellow lightsaber that's never been shown on screen. It's only referenced in Dark Disciple. But what happened was they originally designed it for Clone Wars when they were going to film those scenes. Mm-hmm. They ended up not using it for her. They ended up giving it to Darth Maul when he came back in the Return Clone Wars episodes, and they made it into a red blade that fits his staff. And they've kind of since retconned it so that the piece that Maul is using is actually Maul's. It's actually Asajj's blade that she lost when she died, and he took it and bled it, and that's why it's his saber now. That's like kind of the retcon lore they're using. At least in the park, they're saying that.
Okay, yeah, because the people at the park have to actually answer the questions of why do they look similar? So they need an answer right now.
Yeah, but I one of my like ultimate dreams of cosplay is to try to do the bounty hunter on the verge of kind of shifting back to the light side, Asajj Ventress, because she's such an interesting and tragic character. So.
And a great haircut, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how do you, we get the question often when we're asking listeners for questions of if we would like any of the books and the comics to be adapted into, you know, animated films. And for me, Dark Disciple is always high on that list because I love that that story is there in book form, but I would just love as many people as possible to experience it and to have that quality time visually as well as emotionally with Asajj. How would you feel about that if there was an animated version of Dark Disciple?
I would be really happy about it because I think it was always intended to be animated. So I would like the actual arcs that were written and meant to be and like storyboarded and everything that got turned into that book to then go back to being an animated series again. I would love that.
Yeah,
I think my answer to that question, though, of what arc would I want to see animated, it would definitely be many of the Dr. Aphra stories because I just love I love the way that Dr. Aphra's books are all kind of intentionally dark reflections on other Star Wars characters, and it's very fun.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great way into Aphra for people looking to begin the Aphra journey. You've talked about a bunch of great ideas from Star Wars, but I'm curious if there's a specific idea or theme that you find powerful or useful in your own day-to-day life.
Yeah, I think the thing I said earlier definitely about how, you know, it's the light spark that ignites the fire, right? That's a big one. And I think found family. I think Star Wars at its heart is a collection of found family stories. I think it's very rare that you have a Star Wars story that starts and ends with this character is a loner and they're happy about it and it's all good. Like every Star Wars story, even when a character is kind of on their own, ends up being, you know, a father and son story with Din Djarin and Grogu, or, you know, how Ahsoka finds herself with the people that matter to her. Like that's the reason why she never ends up she never goes off and meditates by herself, because she can't escape the universe because she cares about people too much. And then I think the original trilogy, you've got your Han like literally found family, and that Luke and Leia find each other as family. But even more figuratively, like I think that's what's so important about Rey's journey, is that she's staying on Jakku because she wants her family to come back for her. But it's only by leaving Jakku and being part of things that she finds the people that are her family. And that's important. So I think that's kind of, as someone who moved across the country away from a lot of my close family, and also, you know, went through the process of coming out as queer and how that changed my relationship with people in my life, I think that there is something really important about people who may have no blood relation to you, may not be your secret twin from your evil father and dead mother, but still are family, and still you have ties to them that dig deep. And that's, you know, not a completely uncommon theme across a lot of sci-fi and fantasy, but I think in Star Wars especially, because there's so much of sort of a you and me against the universe, you and me against the galaxy kind of vibe to it. Like I love the relationship between Han and Chewie. Like I think that is such a warm, just constant. And it's so heartbreaking when Han dies and Chewie doesn't have Han anymore, because those two have such a connection and they're such a fun friendship.
Yeah. Yeah. I love everything you're saying. I think Star Wars is so powerful to have the theme of family, that theme of connection, that theme of everyone matters, that theme of we are stronger together. But then there's also this strong thread of, in order to be the best person you can be for your community and for yourself, Star Wars to me is also about who are you as an individual? How do these choices shape you so you can be this best part of a whole? And that's another part that I really love about the Rey story, is that she so needs and wants family and she finds it. But also in that journey, she discovers that in order for me to be truly a part of a family, I need to decide for myself who I am, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what's so tragic about Dr. Aphra, is that she has those people in her life, especially at the end of the Jason Aaron run of it. Kieran Gillen's section where before it goes to Alyssa Wong, who's doing a great job with her arc moving forward, but kind of that gap between the beginning of Empire Strikes Back and then getting into Volume 2 of Star Wars, she has these people in her life who care about her, and she feels like they're better off without her. And she actively like cuts herself out of their lives. And it's so tragic. It's so, but it's such an interesting and fascinating character choice.
Yeah, that is fascinating to see Aphra as an ongoing tragedy. And
yeah,
fascinating to see where it'll end up.
Anytime a new character shows up, they're always, they've got something to say about Aphra and what she's done to their life. It's an interesting journey.
Yeah.
Would you like to see that, Ken? Just an issue of a comic that's just an interview of people who Aphra has messed up. I would love that.
It's almost the Seinfeld finale. Yes, everyone's going to try, but it's great. No, I love Aphra as a character. I think we'll get there someday to have Aphra on TV or somewhere. I really believe that. Yeah,
I feel like we've. Go ahead. I was gonna say, I feel like we're getting closer to that being possible because I think Disney has relaxed a lot of their restrictions on queerness and characters and stuff like that. So hopefully, because I would have been sad if they brought Aphra to screen, but just like sliced all of her queerness out of the story. Because I think that Star Wars is not a series of stories that are usually about relationships romantically anyway. It is only a couple of real, like legitimate romantic stories in Star Wars. But I think Aphra being a disaster lesbian is so core to her story that I want to see more of that.
Yeah,
I'm curious if the Imperial officers that we're seeing in Andor, if any of them are going to be someone who might eventually have to get like bionic body parts to replace them because things are sloppy. Like, I'm curious if we'll get a tie in that way.
Yeah. Young Magna Tolvar.
Yeah.
Tolvin in there somewhere. Great stuff.
Yeah. Passing fist shaking about Aphra would be great in Andor.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But we're going to transition from talking about both the fun and tragedy of Aphra to just talking about fun. We have some fun questions. Ken, take it away.
Yeah, you know, now knowing up top that you have made a great decision to stand away from step away from stand up, you know, it's something we all come to as comics at one point, right? I did have this question though. The galaxy is wide. You got tattooing with Chalmers and Jabba's palace. It got me thinking about what would be like the worst place in the Star Wars galaxy to perform stand up comedy for you.
Well, I think Chalmers is basically just like real places that I have performed stand-up comedy in, like seedy bars that are kind of in the middle of nowhere and most of the people aren't listening and they're mad that you're there and someone might get murdered or get their arm cut off in the middle of the show. So that's that. Been there, done that. I think that while we're on Tatooine, though, I do think Jabba's Palace was probably the worst place to do comedy because if a bit bombs, you will be fed to a rancor and that is not a great way to get you ready to do a good show.
Absolutely. I actually performed at a place in Palmdale, a bar that a week later got shut down for its second double homicide. So it's very real.
Yeah, I guess the other worst place might be the forest planet of forest moon of Endor, because you'd have to have a translator. And if C-3PO can't translate the subtlety of your bits, the audience might eat you. So
imagine 3PO tried to translate the subtleties of comedy.
I imagine he would make everything quite literal, right?
Yeah.
Lots of footnotes for accuracy. I'm curious about Tatooine now that we have some more to work with. How do you feel about doing stand-up at the Sanctuary from Book of Boba Fett? Do you think that's a little more high-end? Would that be a little bit more of a good show?
Well, if you bomb there, you bomb for real. Sorry. It's the easiest. I think the Sanctuary would probably be a little bit better of a place to perform at. I think that might have more of like a comedy club or nightclub kind of vibe to it, which people might be coming to see you do comedy. Before it blows up. Yeah, I thought about that. I think it's the nicer version of being at Chalmers. I was thinking the same thing about Canto Bight. I was like, casino kicks are the worst, so that wouldn't be a good one to go with. The best place I could think of to do stand-up in Star Wars is maybe the Gungan village on Naboo, because I feel like those guys would love to laugh at some stuff.
Oh, a Gungan audience would be the best.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You get a good punchline, you get like across the board. Come on.
Yeah, instead of your goal as a comic to kill, my goal is to just get damp. I need those Gungans to spit on me, and I knew I really knocked it out of the park.
And there's no pressure to do physical comedy because you know they're like over it. They're not a fan of physical comedy. They will ban you if you do it. So it's really all about your performance. It's great.
One pratfall and they're worrying about their hay blibbers. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. And I think you can you probably do an open mic on a Tuesday at Dexter's.
Probably. There's a sign up. You got to get there early and you got to wait. I think that if the audience was into it, the Senate floor would be good because if you got that many thousands of worlds there, you're getting that like stadium vibe where if anyone starts laughing, there's like an infectious crowd response to it. So.
Oh, yeah. And I bet inside political jokes kill, right? That's like the press dinner, right?
Yeah. Although it might be like doing a corporate gig where before you go in there, someone takes you aside and is like, you know, it's probably Bib Fortuna and he's like, hey, just don't do any, not Bib Fortuna, who's the one?
Masamita.
Yeah, Masamita's like, hey, don't do any jokes about the Emperor's face. We've talked about it. It will not go well for you. Just be careful. And don't mention the Kaminoans.
Not here. Yeah, and those kind of gigs where they tell you a joke to say that you have no idea what it means. Like, be sure to mention Orn Frita's head tail. Be sure to mention that. It'll kill.
Oh, my
okay.
God.
Okay.
Well, it could be worse. Could be Orn Frita. Oh my God, they said it. Oh, that's the best.
We also, of course, want to be sure to ask you about lightsabers. If you had a functional lightsaber in real life, how would you use it?
Well, obviously, I would get two of them, and then I would smash into boxes to the rhythm of music. Be a really good cardio workout. So that would be one of them. I do think that I would probably get my lightsaber taken away from me at some point because I would be using it to open like beer cans and things like that. Sodas, like go into a bar, like try to do like magic tricks with it and stuff like that. I would definitely hurt myself. I would definitely do a lot of damage. I'd probably try to glow stick with it at a festival because I do so much festival glow sticking in real life already. But yeah.
Do you think you'd ever be tempted to actually use it in any sort of Jedi-like way to help end an altercation?
I will say that I had a bit of a scary situation where I had parked on a few blocks away from a bar that my friends were at, and I was taking some of my lightsabers from Galaxy's Edge to show my friends the hilt. And I definitely had a moment where a couple of street idiots were kind of being obnoxious. And I was in my head going, am I going to have to use my lightsaber hilt as an actual physical weapon to get myself safely to a place? But and it luckily did not have to. But I think I probably, if it was available to me and I was actually trained in how to use it, I mean, the only thing to stop a bad guy with a lightsaber is a good person with a lightsaber. So yeah, I would definitely. I think I like a lightsaber more as a defensive tool and like a blocker of bolts than I think I would definitely be more of an offensive tool. But
yeah, no, I feel the same way. I feel like I wonder if I had an actual physical lightsaber that it could be used to de-escalate situations. Like, you know, you pull it out and you ignite it and you announce like, I have no idea how to use this. And whoever is giving you trouble is just like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to deal with an incompetent guide with a, you know, blistering light sword.
Everyone knows at least one friend who has lost an arm to a lightsaber at a yeah. bar brawl. So they're like, all right, just don't mess with it.
Yeah, okay. I'm not a regular road rager, but to have it as a tool of menacing, you know, should
have it. Imagining pulling up to someone, turning on your lightsaber, holding out the window and showing it yeah. to them and then putting it back in your car.
Just looking in your rearview mirror and seeing Ken leaning out, laying on the horn, yeah. hanging out with the lightsaber, just shaking.
I had to ride away.
It's like that scene in L.A. Story where people were just firing guns into the L.A. freeway. Yeah. Just like, swinging it at their windows.
Going for the tires with the blade, for sure. Ken, I'm going to pitch it back to you.
Yeah, but you've written this wonderful book on Tatooine, which is this planet that spans many eras, as does Batuu, of course, as we know. So it got me thinking of the known Star Wars eras. And, you know, I include High Republic. Any era you want to go, which one would you choose to live in? What would you do in that era?
I think I would probably choose to live in the High Republic because I like the idea of living in an era where there's not a madman with a machine that blows up planets.
That's fair.
I feel like that's not having that hang over my head would be good. And I feel like the High Republic, like the Nile are rough, but I feel like things are still a little more stable. So I would like to live in a world that's not completely plunged into war constantly, which feels like anything like Republic. So either High Republic or sometime between High Republic and the fall of the Republic, you know, 200 years later. So I want to live in that safe span if I could, because I feel like there's never an era in Star Wars where everything is totally chill and fine. But there are some spaces where you might be able to have a regular lifespan. And I think that if I could not be a Jedi, if I did not have the right midichlorian count or whatever, I think that I would probably be of Star Wars version of what I already am. So instead of being a geek girl who writes books about Star Wars or plays role playing games, I think I would be a geek girl who's like essentially like a Ms. Marvel following, like in Ms. Marvel existing in a world where there are Avengers. I think I would be that. I'd be like fangirling out on the HoloNet about different things that are like things that had happened. Like, oh my God, did you see what happened at Valo when the Republic Fair got attacked? Oh, the Jedi came in. This one guy rode a dragon. Like, that'd be kind of stuff be happening.
Yeah, I might write a Reeth Silas fanfic if I actually lived in the High Republic era.
Yeah, there's a mention in the High Republic era that there are Jedi romance novels, and I think I would probably be an author of Jedi romance novels. I probably should just be an author of Jedi romance novels now, but...
Hey, yeah.
Put it out there and see if the Force responds. Yeah. Here's our final fun question for you. If you could have dinner with George Lucas at any food court restaurant, which would it be and what would you ask Mr. Lucas?
All right. I thought I was going to have an answer to this question before we got to it, and I still haven't. But I do think that restaurant-wise, if we're talking about chain brand names only, I think I might go with like a Charlie's Sandwiches because there's a lot of options there. You can get like a buffalo chicken. You can get a cheesesteak. There's some choices. Otherwise, I think I would go with one of those single location Mongolian barbecue kind of vibes. I feel like there's a lot of options to choose from there. Also, you get a little more time to talk with Mr. Lucas while we're waiting for the food to cook. Plus, he's like, you know, a big samurai fan. So I think he would get a kick out of the swords being used to cook the food. So I think that will be good. And again, it's a good, maybe a healthier meal. Should get a lot of vegetables in there.
Yeah.
Do that. Have I stalled enough to think of what I would ask him?
I think it would be fascinating to see what he would put in his Mongolian barbecue because there's some choices to be at.
Oh, yeah. Does he go full vegetarian? Does he go all meat? What's his sauce choice? Does he do a combination of sauces? Does he just do one sauce?
He has a plan, but then he just alters it as he goes. That's great.
I think I would ask him if he still had the rights to Star Wars and he had the ability to go back and do a special edition of the prequel trilogy and could change something the way he changed, like made changes to the original trilogy, what would he change?
Yeah,
I think that's a really great question, because obviously, you know, he has many interviews where he talks about how he was able to do the prequels at that time because CGI allowed him to do the kind of stories that he wanted to. But it would be fascinating to see with any advances in technology if, you know, did he always, you know, secretly mean for Dex to be made of water or something weird thing?
Yeah. Or was there like a story thing like similar to the very controversial choice to have Han shoot second, which we all know how everyone feels about that. Is there something story-wise that like hasn't sat with him since then? But like, oh, I don't think this really translated the way I wanted it to, or I've changed my feelings on that and I would change this.
Yeah, that's very fascinating.
Yeah, the over time and has the world changed anything that you put in those, or is it just confirm what you thought and just you want to drive the point home? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, granted, I do think the prequels are more purely what he envisioned for them than I think the original trilogy was, since the original trilogy is very famously collaborative and the prequels are very famously what George wanted to do with them. Mm-hmm. But I still would be interested in seeing what current George would do to change the prequels.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And Ken, I think you make a very good point. I think there's a good chance that if he wanted to make tweaks, he might want to just underline some things that he felt he said and he feels that people still aren't hearing.
Yeah.
Underline and italicize. It sucks to be Darth Vader. Let me make that. How can I make that more clear? It sucks to be. I'm renaming Revenge of the Sith too. It sucks to be Darth Vader.
Yeah, you're not supposed to like the Imperials. Underline. This is about imperialism.
He is a mean Nazi space wizard. That is Palpatine steel. Thank you, Riley, so much for the fun questions. Ken, I'm going to kick it back to you to take us home.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, Riley. We really love talking Star Wars with you. Your love of it goes deep. Your connection to the themes and the lessons clearly goes deep. And I love hearing that there. And I love your passion for Afra, because I know that's a very popular character, especially our Force Center listeners. So
yeah, I realize, like, I'm talking about Afra a lot. I'm like, for someone who has not written a book about her, you would think that I had.
Well, I mean, look, here's the thing about Afra. It's like she's already, dare I say, an older character, right? She debuts in like 2014, right? So that's a bit. And so I think it's important to keep the conversation about her going. So, no, good stuff. Yeah.
I have cosplayed as her. If anyone's interested, I do have pictures of me in Afra cosplay. So it was very fun.
Well, awesome. That leads nicely into where we're going next. We want to know where we can find you, your own work, and also where our Force Center fans can get the books there. Any of those books that they like, or all of them, we hope. Where can they find it?
So the books are actually pretty easy to find. They're all, you know, they're licensed books from major publishers, so they are available wherever you get your books. If they don't currently have them in stock, you can order them. So currently, the Batuu book, Galaxy's Edge, Treasures from Batuu, is the only one that is currently available the day we're recording this. The Tatooine book should come out in early September. I don't yet know the final release date of the Life Day book. It says September now, but when they mentioned it at Comic-Con, they said November, so it might get shifted around. But it will definitely be in time for Life Day and for the Advent calendar season. So those are all basically anywhere you get books, your Amazons, your Barnes and Nobles, your local bookstore, which I'm always a big fan of supporting. Mm-hmm. So go there, tell them you want any of those books. So it's Galaxy's Edge, Treasures from Batuu, Exploring Tatooine, an Illustrated Guide, and Life Day Advent Calendar and Pop-Up Book. If you go to RileySilverman.com/books, you will find links to either order or pre-order all of those from major book retailers as well as bookshop.org. And that's obviously in the U.S. I don't know what the release dates are going to be overseas. Otherwise, finding me, I'm on Twitter at Riley J. Silverman. My pinned tweet right now is a link to my book selling page as well. And you can find me on Instagram at Riley Silverman. And that's a lot of things. So that's enough information about me.
But it all makes sense. And yeah, I always say go to the local bookstore and ask it, because if they order it, they'll order a few copies and
It'll be on our shelves there for you there. So always do that if you can. Good way to look at it there. Thank you so much again, Riley. Hopefully not the last time we talk Star Wars with you. We, of course, are the Force Center podcast feed. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod, Instagram, and YouTube as well. Have another live Q&A coming up really soon there. You can also find rebroadcasts of our podcast episodes there. We're on Facebook as well, Force Center Podcast. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. Find us at a lot of spots podcast-wise, but if you're on something like Spotify or Apple, you want to leave us a rating or review, we would appreciate that. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures. And if you are going to the Lovecraft Film Festival in Portland, Oregon, a short film I made will be playing there. That is in the first weekend of October. More information on that as I learn it. But for anything else, any updates on that, just go to josephscrimshaw.com.
Do it, my friends. Do it. Go ahead and explore Tatooine. Go get some gifts at Batu. Do it for us here at Force Center. We'll see you next time, friends. Thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.